Welcome to Creative Disturbance. This is Femmes in Years. I'm Yuna Lee, and I'm talking with Elizabeth Escalante at the University of Texas at Dallas. Elizabeth, would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Una. My name's Elizabeth Escalante, and I'm a PhD student in the History of Ideas here at UTD, and I'm also the Marvin and Kathleen Stone Fellow at the Center for Values in Medicine, Science, and Technology here.
Oh, so you're a Stone Fellow, the researcher.
Yes, that is correct.
And we talk about your research. And would you please tell us more about your research?
Yes. What I'm looking at is the uterus transplantation and the ethical issues surrounding it. It's an extremely new technology. It's still in trials. And it involves the transplantation of a uterus from either a living or deceased donor to a woman who has no uterus, either because she was born without one or has lost it for some reason.
Mm-hmm. That means some people actually prefer to have a uterus rather than, because we have other technology for having a baby.
Right. And the one that this is really a possible alternative to is surrogacy, because there is adoption, and it is true that some doctors have actually come out against the uterine transplant, saying that it's too big a risk when there are reasonable alternatives available, because a woman can have a baby through adoption or surrogacy. Mm-hmm. But the uterine transplant is something that a lot of women are interested in because they want to have the genetic connection, which you can't get with adoption. You can get with surrogacy, but then they want the actual experience of carrying the baby. Mm-hmm. So that's really important to a lot of women. And so it is those women that will benefit from this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is your focus on your study then?
Well, I'm looking at a comparison between the uterus transplant and commercial surrogacy, and looking at all the ethical issues surrounding it, and just trying to figure out if it's an ethical alternative to surrogacy. One thing that made me start questioning this in the first place is last summer seeing that a bill that was brought up in New York to legalize commercial surrogacy was, it did not pass. And some people that spoke against it were Gloria Steinem, world famous feminist, and then the National Organization of Women. And it struck me as odd that feminists were making an argument against against the commercial surrogacy. Because in my mind, thinking of the feminist viewpoint, I was thinking that a feminist would be on the side of a woman being able to do with her body whatever she wanted. Mm-hmm. So if she wanted to be a surrogate to somebody, why would a feminist say no? Mm-hmm. But then I understand the feminist viewpoint saying that surrogacy itself has the potential for exploitation of women, particularly the poor women who could see a way to make a lot of money doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand, because women or men, a person have every right to do whatever he or she wants to their bodies, but there are not always it's just a free choice. We know that because economic reason or any other reason. So So I could understand that point. Mm-hmm. But what other focal point do you have for that?
Well, one of the issues that has come up around it is, first of all, it's a very risky surgery, of course. Whenever you're doing a major surgery, there are risks of anesthesia, for example. But one of the issues is that this is not a life-saving surgery. It's a life-enhancing surgery. Mm-hmm. So if you were talking about a kidney transplant or a heart transplant, that's saving someone's life. Mm-hmm. But this is something that people are doing to enhance their lives. A possible comparison would be a face transplant. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's going to incredibly change someone's life if their face is damaged to get a new face. But it's not a life-saving surgery. So some doctors and people are saying it is not worth the risk for something that's not life-saving.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the life-saving? Because you just mentioned that physically it's not life-saving, but sometimes the social life is as important as the physical life, actually. Yeah.
Yes, and that's a good point. I mean, the social benefits to it. Just the idea that having a baby is something that's so important to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
But the argument against that is that you're taking this risk for an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And is it the right thing to do to take such risk to have the experience of having a baby when you can still get a baby in other ways that are not risky? And the surgery is very unique because it's ephemeral. It's meant to be temporary. So the mm-hmm. uterus is put in to have the baby, perhaps a second, and then it's taken out, which
it's not really transplant. It's like a heart
temporary.
temporary thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the argument for that is the woman is subjected to the immunosuppressant drugs for a short time,
mm-hmm.
unlike a kidney or heart transplant who has to take them for the rest of their lives.
This is that there are many points that are intertwined in this. I think it's about the medical technology and mm-hmm. the human ethics and the women's right and free choice. And then I can think of all kinds of things.
Yes.
So how would you like to just make it order from these things?
It's really, like you said, there are just so many issues.
Mm-hmm.
And my research is going through all of this material and trying to narrow down to a couple of very, very important points that I wanted to talk about. And one of them is the idea of the value of the experience of gestation.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, this is kind of personal, I understand how women can feel and be pressured and have the social, like her family or whatever, putting so much value on having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman can feel like a failure if they're mm-hmm. not able to. I had 4 cesarean sections, and I have to say that I felt like a failure. I felt like I could not have a baby mm-hmm. the right way. And
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
Yes,
and I understand that. I mean, it kind of sounds ridiculous to say that, but those were my real feelings at the mm-hmm. time. So, yeah, the human issues involved are very interesting. One of the social risks, though, is people are worried that this will lead to an elevation of the genetic motherhood and make mm-hmm. it seem like adoption is just looked down as not as good as mm-hmm. having your genetic offspring, having your physical experience of actually mm-hmm. carrying it. So that's an issue there that needs exploration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another... I didn't think about that point, but that's also, yeah, it's a good point. So I have to ask, how did you start this study in the first place?
Well, I've always been interested in how our technology just races ahead of our laws and policies mm-hmm. and legislation. It's always been fascinating to me, the things we can do with technology. And I've been particularly interested in reproductive technologies. I remember since 1978, Louise Brown
mm-hmm.
became
yeah.
the first test tube baby from IVF. And I remember at the time, because I came from a Catholic background, so I remember some people that I knew saying, this was just wrong. You're just not doing it a natural way. You're playing God. You know, you're here mixing a baby in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
So many people spoke against it. But now, today, after all these years, it's so commonplace. I mean, you just don't hear people making mm-hmm. ethical arguments against in vitro fertilization. And so it's just interesting to me to see people speaking against a technology, and then a little time passes and their technology becomes commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
So, and mm-hmm. also, last summer it caught my eye, the idea of the commercial surrogacy being spoken mm-hmm. against by the feminists. So with fewer women being able to go through commercial surrogacy, I have to put a for instance in here now, because there used to be a lot of Americans contracting with women in India
mm-hmm.
to go through surrogacy, but India's put a stop to that. So this uterus transplant would give those women another option the ones that that don't have the uterus. They would have another option besides it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that in doing research, as I heard, there is some fun part, as you said. But also, you know, that we all have that kind of moment. We are interested in, we studied, and then what have I done moment. Yeah. So what's the fun part and what is the difficult part?
Gosh, the fun part is I keep on finding new things to look into, mm-hmm. because one part of the research will just take me in a little bit of a direction, because that's, oh, there's so much information and so many issues, and that's just fun. That's fun for me. Mm-hmm. And the most difficult part for me has been to try to keep my personal feelings and biases out of it. And I'm really just realizing what biases I have that I didn't even think about. Mm-hmm. So that's a hard thing to do, but you know, I'm working on it.
Yeah, I think that you just said a very important point about keeping our own bias, especially when we do this type of the research.
Right.
But another point, it just got me this, that it's a feeling, because this type of research is always could be the compassionate to this,
right.
or just go against it. That's our feeling. It's a bit, little bit different with bias, don't you think so?
I do think so, because having a baby is so personal, and there are a lot of videos available now that are interviews of these women that have mm-hmm. had babies this way, and there's very few of them. There have only been 8 in Sweden, mm-hmm. and then here at Baylor, there have been 5 babies born. And so some of the women have come forward and given interviews, and just hearing their stories, like you said, just the compassion side of it, and hearing the doctors who are who've made this surgery, who are working on it, mm-hmm. They get so involved, just the happiness they have when mm-hmm. the baby is born. So yeah, there's that human element. It's not dry at all. There's a
yes.
huge human element in it.
Yeah, so that's a fun part, but also the difficult part.
Yes.
So if somebody asks you, why do you do this research, and what will you say?
Well, I just think it's so important to have these conversations. It's so important because, like I said, our technology is just galloping ahead of our policies and regulations. And we can't make good policies if we don't understand the issues, if we don't look at it from all different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's incredibly important to have conversations around these, you know, like bleeding edge technologies, all new technologies.
Oh yeah. And it just reminds me of, there was a saying that about the life, that the life is a wild horse. So if you don't ride it, then it will ride you. I think that,
oh.
yeah, it's like technology too. So
right,
yeah,
right.
Technology is like a wild horse. So
yeah.
if we don't ride it, as you said, in the correct way, right way, then it will probably ride us.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
yeah. Yes, that's so how long do you think it will take? You finish, not completely finish, but
right.
yeah, finish in a certain way.
I expect to have by April or May, I expect to have a good piece of research done. But going through all these issues would take years, you know,
mm-hmm.
going through everything.
So you're willing to?
I am. It's so interesting to me. I'm willing to keep on working at it for a while.
So this is I'd like to ask a little piece of advice for the younger, the women, the students, or even the middle school and high school students.
Uh-huh.
What kind of advice could you give if they wanted to go into this kind of difficult research?
I would just, you know, tell them to go for it. If there's something interesting for you that you like and you're really interested in, don't let anything stand in your way. I'm old enough to remember when, in middle school, we were told things like math is for boys, girls aren't good at math.
Yeah.
That was back in the day when we could not even wear pants to school. We had to wear dresses. So we've come such a long way in what women are able to do in science, but obviously we still have a ways to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes, here, I have to say. Yes. We need to talk a lot, and then there's a lot of interesting we could talk about this type of research, but unfortunately, it's a wrap up time. So yeah, thank you, Elizabeth, for taking with us today. And to learn more about Elizabeth and her story, visit the Creative Disturbance site at creativedisturbance.org.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.